Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For our last installment of Full Bio, our week-long conversation about Bob Spitz's book, Led Zeppelin, A Biography, we've arrived at the moments when reality came crashing down on the band. In the mid-1970s, if you attended a Led Zeppelin concert, you might see an astonishing full-throttle performance. Or you might see a zoned-out, drug-addled Jimmy Page and John Bonham so drunk he'd fall off his drum kit. And then there was the emergence of punk rock as the music for young people. Led Zeppelin was struggling to stay relevant. And while it seemed they were somewhat protected by money and fame, a series of tragedies befell lead singer Robert Plant. He was in a car crash that nearly killed his family, and doctors weren't sure he'd walk again. And then came the death of his young son in 1977 while Plant was on tour in the United States. As Bob Spitz writes in the book, quote, "For Robert, the tragedy put into perspective his connections to his life's work, his family, his mortality. As months passed, secluded at home with Maureen and their surviving child, 8-year-old Carmen, he would reflect on the shambles that Led Zeppelin had become, the cruelty, the heedlessness, the decline." Here's today's full bio conversation with Bob Spitz, author of Led Zeppelin, The Biography.
Hey, hey, mama said the way you move gonna make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Reality did enter their lives on more than one occasion. Specifically, Robert Plant's 5-year-old son dies when he's not there, when he's on the road. At some point, he suffers from a horrible car accident, and there's questions about whether he'll be able to walk again. So Robert Plant sort of seems to have a little bit more of an awakening. John Paul Jones, he was going to quit at one point. He was going to just walk out. How did the band's interpersonal relationships start to change?
Well, you know, drugs really drove a stake right through the heart of that band. Robert and John Paul were not partaking, and Jimmy and John Paul and John Bonham were. And, you know, when you have two different kinds of personalities like that in a band, it doesn't make for harmony. But, you know, this started happening really from the beginning of their getting together. They liked each other, these guys, but they weren't friends at all. They didn't hang out together. In a hotel room, they stayed apart. They didn't eat together. They didn't hang out after they got off the road together. When I was working on the Beatles biography, one of the things that just thrilled me was, even at the height of their careers, when the Beatles had, you know, enormous amounts of money and they went anywhere, they didn't each take their own hotel room. They booked a suite and they all stayed together because they liked being together so much. And in fact, even later on when they were suing each other to end the band, they would still vacation together. They would go over to each other's houses to talk about music and to work on songs. Not so with Led Zeppelin. They just kind of went their own ways, and that was harmful. But as you mentioned, Robert suffered several tragedies. I mean, first of all, that car accident that he was in, his wife was declared dead for a few minutes, and they brought her back to life. And his children were hurt in that car accident. And then, of course, his son dies tragically from developing pneumonia. And he was only, I believe, 6 years old at the time. And so Robert is starting to feel like there's some bad mojo going here. Does it have to do with the band? He's not sure. Does it have to do with drugs? He's not sure. But Robert is a very intelligent guy, And it made him withdraw and to reconsider his life. And I think as the band started to fracture a little, Robert decided that he was not going to stick around very long because of that.
There was also this new thing called punk that emerged.
Yep. Right.
What did punk mean for Led Zeppelin?
Well, you know, punk was the next generation of kids coming up and finding their own sound. Look, it happens every 6 or 10 years. There was doo-wop, and then there was the British sound with the Beatles and the Stones and the Who. Then there is Joni Mitchell and Crosby, Stills and Nash and James Taylor. All of a sudden we have Led Zeppelin with the next generation of kids. And now, 6 or 8 years later, all kids who are 14 and 15 are trying to figure out where their music is going to come from. And it was not Led Zeppelin, and it certainly wasn't the old standbys from the 60s. They wanted their own sound, and it was punk. It was these new thrashing bands. Led Zeppelin loved those groups. They went to see them early on. There was really a great instance in the book where Robert and Jimmy go to hear The Damned playing at a theater in the UK. And when they walk in, all the kids start to boo at Robert and Jimmy, and they loved it. I mean, they thought it was great. The kids treated them like dinosaurs. In fact, somebody said to them, you're a lounge act. You're like Billy Joel or the Carpenters. And Robert and Jimmy just thought it was great. And I have to believe that Jimmy felt about that the same way he felt when he saw the Yardbirds breaking up on stage that night at Oxford, and it was just noise and a band. It was anarchy, and Jimmy loved that about it. So they were happy that punk came in, but they also felt that there was a place for both of them. And they were determined to stay the course. And for a year or two, they did. And then they couldn't.
Yeah, you write in a chapter called Swan Song that Led Zeppelin knew that they had to reinvent themselves around 1978. How did they plan to do it?
Well, they decided that their music was going to be more, a little more introverted, that they were going to spend more time in the studio. They couldn't because Jimmy and John Bonham were not well. They weren't well enough to go on that way. But they thought that they would tour less. They would be a little more exclusive when they did finally tour. And they would play, to their audience, which is what bands were doing. The bands from the 60s played to their audiences, and the bands from the early 70s, which was Led Zeppelin and all the groups that they spawned, were going to find their own bands to play to, their own audiences to play to. And they might have succeeded had Robert not decided that he was pulling away from the band, and had, of course, not John Bonham died.
Before we get to John Bonham's death, I want to play a little bit from In Through the Outdoor, which was released on August 22nd, 1979. It had the hits All My Love and Fool in the Rain. That was a commercial success, but a critical disappointment. What did that mean for the band Led Zeppelin at this point?
Well, it drove them nuts, first of all. They couldn't understand why their music was not breaking through. But more than anything, you know, they could sell anything. All they had to do was put out an album and kids would buy it. But it killed them that they were not getting acceptance from the critics at this point. And I think that they just felt that, you know, the curtain was coming down and they were going to push as hard as they could. But they weren't getting anywhere with it. And again, I have to say that a lot of it had to do with the fact that Jimmy, who was the most creative member of that band, was not well and was not functioning at peak anymore. And so it was harder. Also, you know, their audience was shrinking. New generations were coming up and were looking to newer groups, and they weren't part of that.
And when you say not well, he developed a heroin
addiction. Yes, he did. Oh, yeah. Jimmy and John Bonham. And it was changing the way they played in concert. It was upsetting Robert and John Paul to even be in concerts with them anymore, where Jimmy's solos were unwinding for 8 or 9 minutes while they just stood there, not being able to move the music forward. Or John Bonham would play a drum solo that was lasting 35 to 40 minutes, and the rest of the band would just walk off the stage. So, you know, heroin was really affecting. John Bonham would fall asleep on his drums occasionally, and either somebody else had to play or they had to, you know, smack him once or twice to wake him up. Jimmy was seen often playing his double neck guitar, chording on one neck, but strumming on the other neck, not realizing that he wasn't connecting with the guitar. And that was really difficult for him. So difficult for the band, and heroin did interfere at this point terribly.
It should also be pointed out that it wasn't just the band. Back to Peter Grant, their manager, and people behind the scenes were also succumbing to drug addictions and kind of taking their eye off the ball in terms of how to take care of the band, how to promote the band, how to keep the band from hurting itself.
Yeah, it was sad to see. I mean, Peter was, look, for all of his faults, he was there by their side all the time, made sure they always got paid. They were never cheated by a promoter. They never cheated each other. Peter made sure the money was divided reasonably, and there was never a problem. And so at the end, Peter is a raving cocaine addict. One of his artists, Maggie Bell, remembers going to visit Peter in his bedroom, and he never came out of his bedroom anymore in these days. And he went to have lunch, and he picked up one of the television clickers and bit into it and broke two of his teeth. I mean, he was that far gone. As you said, took his eye off the ball. That is absolutely what happened. And so that was the business end was falling apart too. You know, Jimmy and John Bonham had their problems. Peter had his problems. Nobody was communicating. And if you're reading my book, you can see it is a speeding train heading for disaster.
We'll have the final part of my conversation with Bob Spitz after a break about the aftermath of Led Zeppelin after the death of drummer John Bonham. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. We spent this week getting into the details of the book Led Zeppelin, the Biography, Our Choice for Full Bio. The last show Led Zeppelin played as a quartet was in the summer of 1980. It wasn't supposed to be the last. They had scheduled a North American tour starting October 17, 1980, in Montreal. In preparation, the band booked Bray Studios in Windsor to rehearse. Only Robert Plant and John Paul Jones arrived in good shape. Jimmy Page missed the first day of rehearsal, so did John Bonham. When the crew went in search of the two men the next day, they found one dead from alcohol-related asphyxiation. Led Zeppelin's drummer was only 32 years old. Here's our final conversation with Bob Spitz about his book, Led Zeppelin, The Biography. So John Bonham died in September of 1980. Drank too much, asphyxiated on vomit, is that correct?
Yes, exactly. What happened with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin, same thing.
He was buried in October 1980, and you write after that, quote, no one knew quite what to do after that. Mm. What were the options?
Well, you know, they put out a statement saying the group was finished. They met and Jimmy wanted to continue. He wanted to find another drummer, but everybody else knew that that wasn't going to happen. Robert certainly didn't want to go on. He had suffered all these tragedies, and the biggest tragedy of all, another tragedy, was he lost his mate, his boyhood mate, John Bonham. I mean, Robert was just decimated by all of this. And in addition to that, he swore he'd never sing that damn song again, Stairway to Heaven. He had just sung it one too many times. And so, you know, they out of habit, I guess, they auditioned another drummer or two. But it was never going to happen. And over the years, Jimmy and John Paul have tried to get Robert to come back and do maybe a reunion tour with Jason Bonham, John's son, but Robert will have nothing to do with it. He will never do that again.
Yeah, they reunited. I think a lot of people might remember, we'll call it a lackluster performance at Live Aid in the mid-80s. And then they were together one more time after that?
Yes, they had gotten together to pay tribute to Ahmet Erdogan, who was the head of Atlantic Records, a guy they really loved and took care of them all the time. And after Ahmet died, there was a festival tribute to him, and they reconvened with Jason Bonham, John's son, on drums. And they sounded great, but there was still a lot of bad feelings among them. Robert didn't want to sing Stairway to Heaven. He eventually did. They argued, and that was it. He realized he'd never be part of Led Zeppelin again.
Let's fast forward to today. Where is Jimmy Page?
Jimmy is in the UK reissuing new Led Zeppelin records, remastering them over and over, trying to keep the brand alive. Occasionally, he'll go out with another band and play a little. But his whole life in the last 10 years or so has really been devoted to keeping the brand alive, the Led Zeppelin brand alive.
John Paul Jones?
John Paul Jones has been kind of quiet. He's played with a few bands. He sits in with them here and there. He's done some studio work. But he's more or less retired and has a great family, and he's always been a family man. I think he's a happy buckaroo, as we say.
And what do you make of Robert Plant's reemergence recording with Alison Krauss? I mean, they just have a new album out that's been getting raves.
Yeah, listen, Robert's post-Led Zeppelin career has been really interesting to look at, not just with Alison Krauss, which is really a fascinating duet, but he's played with five or six different bands, all kinds of different music, experimenting. Occasionally, he'll do a couple Led Zeppelin songs. Never Stairway to Heaven. But I think he's having the time of his life. And I think that as an old rock and roller, which we all are these days, Robert has really grown old well with the music and is still having fun with it.
What is Led Zeppelin's legacy?
Well, I mean, look, they've put out They've sold more albums than any other rock and roll band but the Beatles. Generation after generation eventually comes to them looking for loud, creative, aggressive, long-standing songs that that move them in a certain way. And just like so many of my generation listens to the Beatles and the Stones and the Who, new young kids are doing all of that, but Led Zeppelin is on their radar as well. And they eventually find them and they absorb them the way all those kids in the UK started listening to the old blues singers. And Led Zeppelin left us with, you know, 10 years of fabulous music of a certain kind that has lived on for 50 years now. And I think it'll be around in another 50.
You started this project not really necessarily being a Led Zeppelin fan. Do you have a favorite song now?
Oh, I do. I guess it would be Kashmir. It's a song that Robert wrote when he and Jimmy came back from traveling to Morocco. And it has all this gorgeous poetry in it. I can't say that about all their songs, gorgeous poetry. But Kashmir has it. The music is unique. There's a lot of far Middle Eastern influences in it. And I think it's the primo Led Zeppelin song.
The name of the book is Led Zeppelin. It is by Bob Spitz. Bob, thank you for giving us so much time. We really appreciate it.
Allison, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face. Stars fill my
Once again, thanks to Bob Spitz for giving us so much time to discuss his book, Led Zeppelin, the Biography. In the near future, you'll find all 4 days of interviews in our podcast feed. Also, shout out to Full Bio engineer on this one, Milton Ruiz, and Full Bio post-production producer, Simon Close.
Top of days for which they sit and wait. All will be
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.